Hi, Tim Roy for Warriors.com and Warriors Sound, and we continue to mock the 2021 NBA draft. The Warriors have just selected with the 7th pick in the lottery. Now it's back to Orlando for their 2nd pick in the top 8. I believe it's the first time in franchise history they've had picks at number 5 and number in the top 8. Detroit with number 1 took Cade Cunningham of Oklahoma State. Jalen Green from G League Ignite and prolific prep of Napa went number 2 to Houston. Cleveland took the Pac-12 Player of the Year, Evan Mobley of USC. Toronto took Jalen Suggs of Gonzaga. Orlando stays local and takes Scotty Barnes of Florida State, or at least in the state of Florida. Oklahoma City takes Jonathan Kuminga, another G League Ignite player coming over from the Congo. And James Bouknight of UConn goes to the Warriors via the pick of Marcus Thompson of The Athletic. So Orlando's back on the clock, and to help us out now from the Orlando Magic Daily, Philip Rossman-Reich joins us to make the selection. And Philip, thank you so much for helping us out. Before we get to the pick, a couple of questions about the Magic. Tell me about the incoming new coach and the coaching change. Were you surprised they let go of Steve Clifford, considering the circumstances? And what do you think the impact will be of a new coaching staff?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised that the Magic and Clifford parted ways, although not entirely surprised. I mean, he had a 1 year left on his contract, and certainly as you're beginning to start a rebuild, the last thing you want is a coach kind of in a lame duck season. So it was either extend him for another 3-4 years or cut bait and move on. And I think honestly, if Steve Clifford wanted to coach a rebuilding team and wanted to kind of be part of this process, I think he'd still be the coach of the Orlando Magic. I thought that he did a really good job getting the team back to the playoffs the first time in 7 years. They had back-to-back playoff appearances before kind of injuries and COVID kind of gutted the team this past season. But it's very clear that Steve Clifford was kind of at a stage of his career where he wants to be competing deeper into the playoffs, and the Magic are going to be a little bit a ways away from that. So I think that decision was the right one for both parties, and I think the Magic did a good job bringing in a coach like Jamal Mosley, who's got a league-wide reputation for being a really strong player development coach, being a strong relationship guy, someone that can get the most out of young players especially. And it's going to be a little bit of a slog here at the beginning stages of this rebuild. There's a lot of kind of unformed talent, or I always call it like unmolded clay. There's a lot to work with, but you just don't know what it's going to turn into. So Mosley will have his work cut out for him, but he seems like he has the right attitude to attack this challenge.
Yeah, 42-year-old Jamal Mosley taking over for Steve Clifford, and you mentioned some rebuilding. How is the fan base responding to this? Because it's a fan base that has been to the NBA Finals a couple of times, has seen Penny Hardaway, Shaquille O'Neal, Dwight Howard, and frontline players. How are they handling this? First the rebuild that never really came to fruition, and now this one.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of frustration with the first rebuild. I kind of say a lot of times about this Magic team and kind of Magic history that they've had a lot of luck on their side. And they got Shaquille O'Neal 3 years into the franchise's existence. They were in the playoffs 5 years into their existence, in the finals 6 years into their existence. They go straight from Shaq almost immediately to signing Tracy McGrady and Grant Hill and having more Hall of Fame caliber players on the roster, and then they go straight from that to winning the number one pick again and getting Dwight Howard. The Magic haven't had the same kind of lottery luck, and they haven't been able to kind of build a roster that can sustain winning beyond that. And so I think there's definitely a lot of frustration about having to go through a rebuild, but at the same time, there's definitely a lot of hope and optimism too. The Nikola Vucevic era had a lot of losing. There was a little bit of moderate success, but everyone kind of understood when they looked at that roster with Vucevic, with Evan Fournier, with Aaron Gordon, that there were limits to it, that they were going to get to the first round, and that was probably it, especially in the Eastern Conference. There didn't seem a lot of ways for this team to kind of move up the ladder. And so I think fans are welcoming this opportunity to kind of restart and refresh the franchise. There's a ton of disappointment in landing with the 5th pick after having the top odds to get one of the top 4 picks in this draft especially. But, from what I can sense from fans, there's a lot of optimism that now the ceiling seems a little bit more limitless than limited like it has been the last few years.
So as you look at this roster right now, what do you like about the Magic roster? And it seems that they have enough prospects that there should be some hope maybe that 2 or 3 of these will pan out and become good frontline players.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of just really solid players. There's a lot of guys that you know you can see fitting into the modern NBA, especially a lot of versatility. A lot of guys who can play multiple positions. You know, you got a guy like Jonathan Isaac who can defend pretty much 1 through 5 pretty easily. You know, maybe not some of the bigger centers, but he's someone that everyone just believes is going to be an all defensive team talent. And even coming back from a torn ACL, I think everyone expects him to be a major positive force defensively for this team. I think that he's going to be an all defensive team player, you know, for years to come. Once he gets back to full health, you obviously have Markelle Fultz, who's got a ton of talent also coming off a torn ACL, but a guy who was really starting to find himself when he was given kind of the low pressure stakes of being with the Magic rather than being with the Sixers. But then you have just a lot of just really young guys who are really coming into their own, whether it's, you know, Cole Anthony and RJ Hampton entering their second years, whether it's Wendell Carter. There's just a lot of guys that you feel like can be solid contributors on an NBA team. You're not sure who the guy is maybe or who the star of that group is, but you know that there's a lot of guys that I think can fit in really, really well with what the team is trying to build.
So as we get to this crossroads here, Philip, the mock draft the way it is, where does Orlando go with this pick? Make the selection number 8 for the Magic.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, my good friend Dante Marcatelli went the route that I would not have gone. I don't think I would have gone with Scottie Barnes at that pick, but I want to be respectful of that, and make sure that the Magic are still supplementing the team with the kind of guys that they need. I'm picking between Moses Moody and Keon Johnson here, and I'm a little upset that the Warriors took Book Knight before me, because that would have been the perfect guy to pair with Barnes. But I think I'm going to stick with Moses Moody of Arkansas. I really like his ability to shoot the ball. The Magic are desperately in need of some shooting, and he showed some scoring ability at Arkansas. You know, he had I think 4 games where he scored 28 points or more. In some big moments too. And while, you know, he doesn't necessarily project as a top end guy, and I don't know if he can be a great kind of off the dribble guy, the fact that he is got solid defensive instincts, that he's got the physical tools and the length that you need to play good defense, and he's a great shooter, that's something the Magic desperately need. And I think, you know, after kind of taking a swing with a guy like Scottie Barnes and going for someone that's a little bit less developed, I'd go with someone that's a little bit safer and a little bit more developed than Moses Moody with that second pick.
As the SEC Freshman of the Year. And, you know, Philip, the number that jumped out to me, you're right, the shooting numbers are really good. They project really well for the NBA. But he got to the free throw line 150. I mean, he made 151 free throws in 32 games. That's a lot, and that bodes well too, because, you know, there's nothing like it. You know, sometimes you get great shooters, but they don't get to the line. This shows you that he can help you on nights when the shot's not falling.
Yeah, and I think that fact that, you know, he has some experience and has some ability to score off the dribble, it gives him a little bit more of a ceiling. Like, I've seen everyone kind of characterize him as a 3-and-D guy, and I see that as his floor. I don't see that as his ceiling. So I think there's, you know, one thing that I really like about Moody is, yeah, he probably still needs a little bit more work off the dribble if he's going to play that role, but he's shown the growth potential to get there. And again, when you're drafting in the top 10, you want to play something safe, but you also want to have guys that can grow a little bit and be a little bit more than what you might think on draft night.
Philip Rossman-Reich of the Orlando Magic Daily. You can follow him online on Twitter at @PhilipRR_OMD, and you can find out what's happening with the Magic and around the NBA. Philip, thank you so much for participating in our mock draft.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Philip Rossman-Reich of the Orlando Magic Daily, and Moses Moody, good shooter, good player from Arkansas, goes to the Magic. 8 picks through our 2021 NBA mock draft. Sacramento is on the clock when we continue here at Warriors.com and Warriors Sound. We continue to mock the 2021 NBA draft here on Warriors.com, Warriors Sound. I'm Tim Roy, and let's run down where we are. We're at pick number 9 now in the lottery. Detroit taking the number 1 selection, Cade Cunningham, everybody's number 1 pick out of Oklahoma State. Jalen Green, who played high school ball at Prolific Prep in Napa and the G League Ignite last year, goes to Houston. Evan Mobley, the Pac-12 Freshman of the Year and Player of the Year out of USC, goes to Cleveland. Jalen Suggs, who helped Gonzaga to the NCAA Championship game, goes to Toronto with the number 4 pick. At number 5, Orlando stays in Florida and takes Scottie Barnes of Florida State, kind of moving up a little bit up the ladder there. Oklahoma City, Jonathan Kuminga is their pick, again out of G League Ignite. James Bouknight goes to the Warriors out of UConn, the pick by Marcus Thompson of The Athletic, and Moses Moody of Arkansas, outstanding shooter, and he goes to Orlando. And that puts the Warriors' NorCal neighbor, the Sacramento Kings, on the clock. And to help us with that, Kings announcer Jason Ross will join us. And Jason, I know, you know, and Warrior fans can feel your pain. You know, they've gone through a stretch like what the Kings are going through right now. And it just seems there's no way out. And it just seemed that way for the Warriors for years. You know, they had the We Believe team that was pretty good team for 2 years, but then right back down again. And then in 2009, you know, the Cards played right, and there's Stephen Curry, and everything changed for the Warriors since that day. You know, what has to happen for things to change for the Kings?
You know, as you said that, Tim, I'm thinking, you know, the We Believe, that was such a great moniker, such a great rallying cry for fans. Maybe I should create We Doubt and then just, you know, legions of Kings fans that have been tied the record of 15 consecutive years of not making the playoffs. Give them some, you know, where they feel like they are. But, no, I think what they've got right now, in all honesty, is a foundation of a really good young backcourt. Fox wasn't an all-star, but played like one. Halliburton, they were on the right side of that last year in the draft. And then it's filling in the pieces. I'm almost certain that's their two major building blocks, but a true professional in Harrison Barnes is still here. They got to decide on kind of the fate and future of a guy like Marvin Bagley and Rashawn Holmes. So it's weird for all those years. I joke that, you know, 15 straight years of not making the playoffs. There were some years when the year ended, I'm like, get rid of everybody. They actually have players I would like this team to keep. So I think they have some pieces, but you know, the West, it's difficult, and the Kings are kind of in that mix of needing to get right, needing to make every decision, be on the right side of all those decisions this offseason.
Yeah, Marvin Bagley's a guy that you kind of look at, and he's only 22, but it seems like, you know, he's kind of a lightning rod for people. You either really like him or you don't.
Yeah, and it's, to me, when he's legitimately on the court, he has produced. Now, he has some flaws, and nobody's game is always all the way there, but I think part of where the flaws show up is the starts and stops. 15 games, out for 10, plays 22, misses half a season. I mean, he hasn't had a supremely long stretch of just consecutive games, and so he's grown, he's gotten better, he is physically talented. But you got to be able to play. And I mean, the Kings have to know, hey, can we count on you for 70 games, 65 games? And they haven't been able to do that.
You have to be excited if you're a Kings fan. And if you look at the play last year, Rashawn Holmes and Tyrese Halliburton, who they got in last year's draft, because those two guys just made plays to help make that team better.
Yeah, and they worked really well together. Tyrese Halliburton, remember his first game. So, you know, when just like the Warriors, when they draft somebody, I'm sure everybody watches all the YouTube highlights, reads everything they can. I did all that. But I want to see him. And then I saw him. I go, whoa, he gets it. Like, he just knows how to play. And people talk a lot about basketball IQ. It just innately in him. He makes the right plays. He makes people better. And he can get better. Like, you watch him sometimes and you think, he just kind of peppers the stat sheet all the way through. He reminds me a little bit of someone like Draymond that's going to make someone better. He makes his teammates better, but then sometimes, hey, get some for yourself. And he found that as the year went on. So he's been really a good fit. And he's taken De'Aaron off the ball some, which has fit into his game, and vice versa. So I think they've got to be really excited about those two in the backcourt.
Do you expect the Kings to be really active this offseason in moves? And what would their needs be?
I think the needs are front court. Now, they've been rumored in lots of different things, and still with Monty McNair being now one full season here, he was pretty aggressive at the trade deadline, so we saw that, acquiring some new pieces, and got some tougher guys in Terrence Davis, DeLon Wright, and Mo Harkless, that kind of thing he felt was missing from the team. And he's always said he will move. He'll do it. If the deal is right, he wants to have the flexibility to go get a big piece. Talks about when they were in Houston that the time was right when they got a guy like James Harden, and they moved for other, you know, high profile guys like Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook over time. So I think he's going to be kind of cut in that cloth, but he's also not going to just give away pieces. So I know that doesn't necessarily answer it, but I think if he has the right move, he's going to be aggressive and go for it.
So if the scenario plays out the way it is, and this is what the Kings are looking at with the ninth pick in the draft, where do they go?
Yeah, so I like a couple of situations here. I mean, I think there certainly is a need for depth in the front court, maybe more at the small forward position. I know they're really happy with Harrison Barnes, but kind of behind him, what else could they be looking at? So you're looking at guys like potentially Jalen Johnson, Keon Johnson, Franz Wagner. I think those are some nice needs. I like Chris Duarte out of Oregon. But I'm going to do something a little bit different here, Tim, and I know they probably like a guy like Davion Mitchell too, but I feel like the strength right now is in their backcourt. Most people tell you not to go for need. This one would be a little bit of a need and maybe talent and maybe a stretch, so you could get burned here, and I feel like people get burned in draft lotteries in the past by going big. But I'm really intrigued by Kai Jones. I think the big guy from Texas, power forward, maybe center, is super athletic and get up and down the floor. Feels like more of a present day big. Maybe that's a reach. Maybe maybe this would be my last lottery selection, but you seem to have me back. So I'm going to go off the board a little bit here. Man, maybe he's a few picks behind here, but I think I'm going to go Kai Jones for the Kings.
Well, I think one person that would be very happy with that is the Warriors assistant coach, Chris DeMarco, because he is the national coach for the Bahamas. And, of course, Kai Jones grew up there, and he's hoping to have him on board in the future. But he's the six-man award winner in 2021. He's got that leg, 6'11", 218 pounds. He had 30 block shots as a freshman in 27 games, and that, you know, plays out pretty well. And his three-point shooting improved significantly from his freshman year to his sophomore year, from 29% to 38%. So you feel it gives him kind of that versatile big that maybe can help fill a couple of holes and maybe make the guys in front of him a little bit better?
Yeah, and it also goes to another spot, too, of, I mean, one of their big questions is, are they going to keep a guy like Rashawn Holmes? He's a free agent. I know they like him, but I know there are suitors for him. I think people are going to be targeting him, so I know the draft is before free agency, but if they get wind that they may lose a guy like Rashawn Holmes, not that he replaces him day one, but maybe he's a part of your future in replacing him. And maybe ultimately, maybe Bagley's best position might be a five now. Maybe he starts there and you do some things differently. So, you know, they've got some versatility in their lineup, but I would think one of the areas of need and weaknesses is kind of some upfront size.
Well, Jason, you know, I'm planning to continue my NBA career until we get a Warriors-Kings playoff series. So hopefully the two teams can converge on very good years in the same season, and that would be so much fun, and it's long overdue.
I still can't believe that's never happened in the, well, now 36 years the Kings have been in Sacramento, that they've never been in the playoffs at the same time. There was a small window of time last year, Tim, I thought, oh, this might happen in the play-in game, and then the Kings fizzled a bit at the end. But we'll take it if it's one game, if it's a seven game. It just needs to happen.
Absolutely needs to happen. Jason Ross of KHDK and, of course, on the Kings broadcast, thank you so much for your help on our mock draft and continued success.
Thank you, Tim. And how much do you think I can get for those We Doubt shirts?
I think you can probably get a pretty good price, but long-term career advice, I probably wouldn't do that, but okay.
Yes. You know what? I should trust you on that one. I think I'll can it, but just I'll put it out there. Someone else can steal it and make the money, and then we'll be amused by it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks, Tim.
Well, we thank Jason Ross for helping us out on the 2021 NBA Mock Draft. I'm Tim Roy. 9 picks in the book. Number 10, the New Orleans Pelicans. They're on the clock right now, and we'll come back with that pick right here at Warriors.com at Warriors Sound. We continue to mock the 2021 NBA Draft. I'm Tim Roy for Warriors.com and Warriors Sound, and we're getting through the lottery here at this point now. We're up to pick number 10. The first 9 have gone as follows. Cade Cunningham of Oklahoma State goes to Detroit, and then Jalen Green, who played his high school ball, prolific prep up in Napa, and he played for the G League Ignite last year. He goes to Houston. The Cleveland Cavaliers go big with Evan Mobley of USC, the Pac-12 Player of the Year. Jalen Suggs of Gonzaga, who took the Zags to the championship game, he goes to Toronto. One little bit of a wrinkle for Orlando at number 5. Scotty Barnes moves up a little bit out of Florida State. And then Jonathan Kuminga, another G League Ignite player, goes to Oklahoma City, who, as we know, has just about every pick in the next 7 drafts. Now, the Warriors at number 7, the pick made by Marcus Thompson of The Athletic. James Bouknight of UConn goes to the Dubs. Orlando, with their second pick of the top 8, goes for a shooter, Moses Moody out of Arkansas. And then Kai Jones, the Big 12 Sixth Man of the Year, Big 7-footer, a lot of potential. Kai Jones out of Texas goes to the Sacramento Kings. The New Orleans Pelicans are on the clock, and our friend of Warriors Radio, Daniel Sowerson of Pelicans Radio, joins us right now. And Daniel, it was an interesting year for the Pelicans. Stan Van Gundy gets down there, a named coach. You have some talent, but whether it be for COVID or injuries and just lack of continuity at times, what happened to the Pelicans this season, and what did they learn that will help them going forward?
I think a combination of all those things you mentioned, Tim, the fact that the head coach only lasted 1 year here with New Orleans, and now David Griffin is set to hire a third coach in 3 seasons. Definitely a different approach, Stan Van Gundy, compared to Alvin Gentry, who was the coach before Stan. And look, this is a very young team. You got rid of Jrue Holiday, who, as you know, is in the NBA Finals for the Milwaukee Bucks. You get a bevy of picks for him. You get Eric Bledsoe and Steven Adams in a 3-team trade. But those guys, as far as Eric Bledsoe, really struggled this season in his first year with New Orleans. Steven Adams battled some injuries, but was a pretty good rim protector for New Orleans. But I think the youth and the lack of continuity with this team really hurt the Pelicans in such a compacted season with a lack of training camp and a new head coach. And look, every team went through it, so I don't want to make that excuse for just the Pelicans. But I think the combination of all those things really hurt the Pelicans get going, and after that really can get over the hump as far as stringing some wins together.
Zion Williamson is a player that, it's almost impossible to guard. And what do you project with him? Where is he going to be better maybe this year or in a couple of years that will help make him even more unguardable, if you will?
Well, I think he's going to start to maybe adapt a little bit of a post game as far as a little bit of a hook shot or a runner or kind of that 5-to-10-footer that we started to see a little bit at the end of the season, because, of course, we know his ability to get to the basket. Point Zion was activated earlier in the season, and we saw the promise that brought, able to create around 5 assists per game. And of course, that opens things up for a bunch of shooters. And we already know, as I mentioned, what he can do at the basket. But I think, potentially whether he develops more of a 3-point shot, which I'm sure he's working on this offseason, or maybe just expanding his range a little bit, not saying more of a mid-range jumper, but maybe developing a little bit of a floater or that 5-to-10-footer that can really help him as far as getting more points, but also kind of keep the defense on its toes as far as how do you guard a man of his size that can shoot this so well.
Now, there's a lot of good players on this roster. There's a lot of talent on this roster, and there's a lot of players who would be, possibly attracted by other teams if the Pelicans were in the, wheeling and dealing market. Do you expect this to be a busy offseason for New Orleans, and would you expect a changed roster heading into next year?
At this point, I would say yes. I think at this point, as far as Zion now in his third year and Brandon Ingram here, as those are the two cornerstones of this franchise, and after two, I would say, and I think everyone would say, two disappointing seasons to start the David Griffin era, I think there could be some swift changes to the roster this year, whether it comes in this draft or using the draft as leverage to create some veteran presence, or whether they go out in free agency and make a deal. I think this is going to be a huge offseason for David Griffin. It starts with the head coach here that will be announced in the next few days, and then trickles down to the roster that will start on July 29th with the draft. So I don't think this roster is going to stand pat after a couple of disappointing seasons. So I expect a little bit of an overhaul, which could be a little bit of a challenge when we talk about that continuity that the Pelicans are looking for. Maybe this is the offseason where they start to build that when they can complete the roster that they really want.
Hey, before I ask you about the pick, I wanted to ask you about the NBA fan base in New Orleans, and what impact has Zion had on that fan base?
Oh, it's been incredible. We go back to draft night in 2019 where we did our draft show up in Fulton Alley, which is, right in the heart of downtown New Orleans. And it just felt like, it's no comparison to the Deer District right now, Milwaukee or Jurassic Park, but it kind of had that feel to it as far as knowing that Zion Williamson was to become a New Orleans Pelican. And then ever since then, this fan base has gravitated towards him. You have, the crowds have been fantastic ever since he joined the team. Everyone is on Zion watch, whether it's, when we're on the road or whether he's at home. His impact that he's had on the community and on the organization, it's been a thrill to have him. And I think the sky's the limit for him. I think it's only going to get better for this fan base and the organization.
Yeah, I can't wait to get down there. I thought that when that building was full, the atmosphere, like in the Warriors Pelicans playoff series a few years ago, the atmosphere is great, and that's always fun. And to be honest with you, Daniel, I hope to see you in person sometime soon. That'd be nice too.
I hope so. I'm hoping this is the year, because we talk about these, whether these are phone conversations. I'm tired of doing Zoom conversations with you, Tim. I would like to see in person and have these conversations about our ball clubs.
Absolutely. So if the draft goes this way in the lottery, in our mock draft, the way it's played out. So now at number 10, and the Pelicans would put in the word that this would be their pick. Where would they go?
I'm surprised that he is on the board at number 10, but I'm going to go with Davion Mitchell from Baylor. Of course, a national championship last year with the squad. I think he made a huge impact on the team, especially what he did in March Madness. But, of course, the Pelicans are looking for a couple things here. Defense was in the bottom five for a lot of last season, and someone like Davion can really contribute as an on-the-ball defender or an off-the-ball defender. As far as his offense is concerned, he made a huge leap as a three-point shooter, going from 31% over his first two seasons to 45% as a junior. And with the Pelicans at the bottom five in three-point shooting and attempts, I think that's someone that can easily, if he can stay at that 45%, would certainly add a three-point shooting threat to the roster. So for me, a guy that's a good playmaker, ability to pass. You saw the hustle in him during the national championship and what he was able to bring on that end. The floor, I think that tenacity is something that the Pelicans would welcome with open arms.
Yeah, you know, he's probably the best on-ball defender in this draft. And you know, the other part that's really curious about this, years gone by, and even for teams that would have a small guard, you would say, he's 6'2", but let's take a little, survey and look around, the league. Chris Paul's what, 6'3"? And he's in the NBA Finals. Steph Curry's 6'3". You go to Atlanta and, they have an outstanding small point guard. So I think the value of a Davion Mitchell is higher now than maybe it was 10, 15 years ago.
Absolutely. I think you have a high IQ player, especially on the defensive side, always in the right position. He can make smart rotations. And again, a pick and roll defender who can fight through schemes. Those are the little things that maybe fans won't get too excited about, but us watching the game on a night to night basis would know that's a huge impact on the game. And then a guy like Davion Mitchell, again, to set the tone for the defense for the Pelicans, I think this is a guy that if he's going to be able to contribute like he did last year on the offensive side, you get the bonus of him being, as you mentioned, one of the best on ball defenders, in this draft. So I think you get the best of both worlds with him. And he's got that veteran presence as far as his age, 22, coming out of Baylor, spent, redshirt junior, so he has the years there. I think this could be a match made in heaven if he's able to fall to number 10. I wouldn't be surprised if he's not there, but if your mock draft is where we're going, then yes, I'll take Davion Mitchell at numbers 10.
I think that's great value at number 10. Daniel Salerson, thank you so much, and continue to success with your coverage of the Pelicans.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Hope to talk to you soon. Hope to see you soon as well.
So the New Orleans Pelicans go for a guy who lasted longer than most everyone would have imagined, Davion Mitchell, the fine defender, organizer, and all-out hustle guy for the Baylor Bears, the national champions. He goes to the New Orleans Pelicans. We're now through the first 10 picks of the NBA draft, 11 and 14, and 14 is where the Warriors will select. Those are left. So keep coming back here to Warriors.com and Warrior Sound. Pick number 11 is next. Stay tuned. Hey, we continue to mock the 2021 NBA draft here at Warriors.com and Warriors Sound. I'm Tim Roy. Thanks for joining us, and we're up to pick number 11. Charlotte is on the clock, and here's how the draft has gone so far. Detroit picked Cade Cunningham, everybody's number one pick out of Oklahoma State. Jalen Green, who played at prolific prep in Napa and G League Ignite, goes to Houston. USC's Evan Mobley lands in Cleveland. Jalen Suggs of Gonzaga goes to Toronto. Scotty Barnes of Florida State to Orlando. G League Ignite's Jonathan Kuminga goes to Oklahoma City. The Warriors, via Marcus Thompson of The Athletic, take James Bouknight of UConn. A good shooter from Arkansas, Moses Moody, goes to Orlando, their second pick in the top eight. Sacramento, a little bit of a flyer on Kai Jones out of Texas. And New Orleans, very happy to see Davion Mitchell of Baylor still on the board, and they take him at number 10. That will get us to the Charlotte Hornets, who last year went 33-39. And to help us unravel the Hornets, Tim Bontemps of ESPN, very gracious with his time. He's been very busy, as you know, with the NBA Finals, but taking time out to help out with the Hornets. And you look at that Hornets roster right now, and it just seems they have a lot of wings. What do you think is their overall need? If you were looking at Charlotte saying they need this, what would it be?
I mean, I think in today's NBA, Tim, as you know, you can never have enough wings, right? I mean, you've been front and center to a Golden State Warriors team that it really kind of redefined the league by playing, with the death lineup and playing as many 6'7", 6'8" guys as you can. And so I certainly think that if they could find another player in this draft that can fit the run and gun mold that they've sort of started to develop with LaMelo Ball in Charlotte, I think they'll be happy to do that. But the one hole this team clearly has on the roster is its center. That's a spot that, you know, the Charlotte Hornets have been talked about trying to fill by a trade the past couple of years. There was some thought that James Wiseman would be the pick for the Hornets last year at number 3 if he didn't go to the Warriors with the pick before them. But obviously, Charlotte went with James Wiseman off the board, went with LaMelo Ball, who had a fantastic rookie season, was a deserving Rookie of the Year selection, and certainly has this team set up to be as interesting and as exciting as they've probably been, you know, no disrespect to Kemba Walker. There's a chance to have them be as exciting as they've been since they were brought back into 20 years ago.
You know, if they could find the center, then Cody Zeller maybe comes off the bench, and then I think you have something.
Yep. Yeah, no question. Cody Zeller's a free agent. It's the only team he's ever played for. I could see him coming back. He's he's really developed a lot of strong roots in Charlotte. And like you said, especially with his injury history, if you can play him 15, 20 minutes a game, Tim, you're feeling pretty good about him as a backup big. But, you know, certainly with the way these guys are trying to play, getting up and down, running up and down the court, you know, there's a reason, you know, Rashawn Holmes was obviously played down the road in Sacramento this year, has been linked to them some in free agency as an athletic rim running big who can really get up and down the court with them. But I think more than anything else, looking at this Hornets team with LaMelo Ball and with the fast paced style of play they're playing with, you know, Miles Bridges and Terry Rozier and these guys running up and down the court, whoever the Hornets pick, you would have to think they're going to fit with that kind of system and being able to play, you know, the up-tempo style that James Borrego had them playing really well last year.
Are you on board the Devontae Graham bandwagon?
Devontae is a really interesting player. He blew up in his second year, as you know, coming out of Kansas and had a really impressive season, got a lot of most improved player buzz. And, you know, I think he's a really good sixth man off the bench. And I think because of the LaMelo Ball pick, he's kind of been able to fall into the perfect spot there where – if you have him come in and really fill it up for 20 minutes a game, I think he could be a really good player on a really good team. But if you're trying to rely on him as a starter going forward, given his size, you're probably going to be in tough shape. But that's the great thing about what Charlotte has right now with Terry Rozier and LaMelo Ball next to him is that he's got a big physical guard that can play next to him whenever he's on the court and can make up for some of those deficiencies in his game. So, you know, the Hornets are a really fun and interesting young team. And you know, if they can get another guy to pop in this draft, and they've had success drafting this range before. They got Miles Bridges right around here a couple of years ago. They got PJ Washington the year after that in the same range. If they can get one more piece to go with this group and grow together, and we haven't even mentioned Gordon Hayward, but a really nice year after coming over from the Celtics. There's a lot of reasons for some optimism around this Hornets team to really finally break through and be consistent.
Now, I have to change gears for a second. I want to take advantage of the fact that we have you on the line here and just kind of sidetrack. And give me your thoughts on the NBA Finals and this, you know, nice little coronation for the outstanding talent that is Giannis Antetokounmpo.
You know, it was really neat, Tim, to be in Milwaukee for Game 6 and to be at this whole series and see the way this played out. I mean, you spent decades with the Warriors, right? And you saw what it meant to people, especially in 2015, first championship after, you know, 40 years in the desert, right? And for this for this Milwaukee Bucks fan base, it had been 50 years since this team had won a championship. And it had been 45 years since Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had asked for a trade and left. And you never know if you're going to get that kind of player to come through your door again. I mean, he's one of the five best players of all time. And for Giannis Antetokounmpo, with his unbelievable story coming from the streets of Athens, Greece, to become arguably the best player on the planet and to have one of the truly iconic, not only game six performances to close out the series, tying Bob Pettit with his 50 points for the most ever in a closeout game in the finals, but having one of the single best NBA finals of all time. I mean, putting up 35, 13, and 5 a game while shooting 61% from the field. I mean, it's just laughable numbers from him. And to do that and to have that game six 3 weeks after I was in Atlanta for game four of the Eastern Conference Finals and saw him crumple to the ground after his leg bent in a very bad direction. And he and I and everyone else in that arena thought he was going to be out for a year at that point. And for him to come back a week later to play in the NBA Finals, to put up these numbers, to lead the Bucks to a championship the way he did, it was an unbelievable performance. And, you know, it was pretty neat to see a team that went all in and got Jrue Holiday, that has built with Chris Middleton and Giannis over the last 8 years, has slowly, methodically gone through the trials and tribulations that come with being a playoff team and, you know, losing in the conference finals, losing in the second round, getting bounced in the first round for a few years before that. It was really neat to see it all come together for them and result in a championship that, you know, it really felt earned, you know, and that's a team that has been through a lot and went through a lot to get there. And it was really neat to see Giannis break through and play that way. And the Bucks to win a championship over a really good Phoenix Suns team that pushed them really hard, but in the end just didn't have an answer for Giannis.
Yeah, you know, and he's such a great ambassador for the game because he loves it so much. He's such a good guy. I think it was as much as I want, you know, the Suns to have won for some of my friends who work for the Suns, but,
yes,
you know, that would have been cool too. So I would have been good either way, but I think for the league, having Giannis win and be the guy that he is, that's really, really cool. But back to business now. Number 11 pick, and I really appreciate that answer. That was really well said. The Charlotte Hornets on the clock. Davion Mitchell has just gone to New Orleans, and if this is the way it unfolds on draft night, which player do you think the Hornets will select?
So I'm bouncing around in my head between a couple different spots here because this has fallen in an interesting way. So you've got Keon Johnson from Tennessee, who's a guard, who is a younger guy with some really high upside. Same with Josh Giddey, you know, a guy that, you know, Golden State, some other teams have been rumored to be looking at, a big, long Australian wing. Got Franz Wagner, Mo Wagner's brother, who was drafted a few years ago out of Michigan, another wing player. And Jalen Johnson from Duke, who's kind of has this kind of size and build to be a good fit for what the Hornets are doing. Now, I would have thought, you know, like we talked a lot about centers, I would have thought that if there was a center in this range that made sense that the Hornets would go that way. But the way this is shaken out, there's just a bunch of these guard prospects that are really interesting for them to kind of fill in around LaMelo and these guys. So ultimately I'm going to go with Keon Johnson from Tennessee. It's a bit of a long-term swing for them. He might not be ready to help right away, but we talked a lot about the depth that the Hornets have in the backcourt with guys like Terry Rozier and Devontae Graham along with LaMelo. And so you could be a little bit patient with a guy like Keon Johnson, but if he develops in the way that he has the potential to, he could be a perfect fit with him going forward. And then, you know, that's the kind of, you know, higher upside swing that the Hornets really need to hit on to get that last piece that could maybe really make them into a really interesting team down the road in the East. So, you know, like I said, there's a bunch of guys that are interesting there that sort of fit, but ultimately I'll go with Keon Johnson from Tennessee for the Hornets with the 11th pick in the draft.
Yeah, a couple of notes about Keon. 48-inch max vertical leap at the combine. I mean, so you know he's athletic. And then the other part I thought was really interesting, he led Tennessee in drawing charges. So that tells me he kind of sees the floor and he understands angles and defensive rotations, and that's a good guy to have. When you have a guy that can draw charges, that means they kind of think the game a little bit, and that's a good thing to have. So
Yeah, he's a big time athlete. He's a tenacious defender, and he's a guy that if the offense develops, he's got a chance to be a really special player. But again, if he's playing next to Melo, who's going to be, you know, pulling the strings on offense anyway, you're going to need somebody to lock up on D next to him anyway. So I think, you know, it's an interesting fit, and I think if it does fall this way, it could work out really well for the Hornets.
Tim Bontemps, thank you so much for helping us out, and please enjoy your time off after the draft.
Appreciate you, Timmy. Thanks for having me, man.
So Tim Bontemps of ESPN, he goes with Keon Johnson, the athletic young guard out of Tennessee. 11 picks done in our 2021 NBA mock draft. San Antonio is on the clock here at Warriors.com and Warrior Sound. We continue to mock the 2021 NBA draft here at Warriors.com and Warrior Sound. I'm Tim Roy, and we are almost through the lottery. Number 12, San Antonio is on the clock. Here's how the draft has gone so far. Detroit took Cade Cunningham of Oklahoma State, Jalen Green of prolific prep in Napa, and the G League Ignite. He went to Houston. The Pac-12 Player of the Year, Evan Mobley of USC, goes to Cleveland. Jalen Suggs of that outstanding Gonzaga squad, he went to Toronto. Scotty Barnes from Florida State stays in-state and goes to Orlando. Another G League Ignite player, Jonathan Kuminga, who was born in the Congo, he goes to Oklahoma City. Marcus Thompson of The Athletic selected James Bouknight of UConn for the Warriors. And Orlando back on the clock with their second pick, and Moses Moody, the shooter from Arkansas, ends up a Magic player. Sacramento goes with Kai Jones, the big kid out of Texas. Davion Mitchell of Baylor went to New Orleans. And Keon Johnson, raw talent, tremendous hops out of Tennessee. He is now a Charlotte Hornet in our mock draft. So with San Antonio on the clock from ESPN Radio in San Antonio, 12:50 a.m. on your dial. Carl Schoening joins us, and if that's a familiar name, of course his dad is the voice of the Spurs. So, Carl, first of all, thank you for helping out in the mock draft. And how is the summer going right now for Spurs fans?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the draft is like Christmas for me, so I always love to do these kinds of things and scour who's going to be the next crop of talent to enter the NBA. And as for how things are going for the Spurs, if you follow Spurs Twitter, there's a whole lot of positivity. A lot of people love the Spurs, but there's a little bit of negativity there in terms of they're spoiled. They're not used to missing the playoffs. They want something drastic to happen. So a lot of fans probably are telling the Spurs they should trade up, or the more unrealistic ones are saying they should trade for a superstar that, you know, isn't going to be moved. But overall, I think the Spurs that are level-headed and have been paying attention to the Austin Spurs are really excited about this crop of young players that they have on the roster. Fun fact, the San Antonio Spurs under roster are the youngest team in the NBA and I believe in professional sports. So definitely a different world from the as Pop used to call them, older than dirt Spurs with Tim Duncan.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And I think Warrior fans are kind of going through a little bit of what Spurs fans are going through as well. And it's very hard to continue to, get tremendous talent out of the 30th pick or the 29th pick. That's really a hard thing to do. And I think, eventually both franchises have suffered for that. But there are some pieces on this roster. And as you look at the roster right now, what would you say their needs are going to be?
They're pretty well-rounded, but with Rudy Gay departing, I believe that the combo forward, that 3-4 that is really popular and you can't have too many of in the NBA at the moment, is probably where the Spurs are looking in the draft. You tend to go for best available, but I think that that's a position that the Spurs could potentially draft just because they want to fill a need. And if they have somebody higher on their big board between combo forward and a guard, they'll probably end up going with the combo forward if they like him enough.
You know, one guy I thought of during the NBA Finals was DeMar DeRozan. You know, all of a sudden everybody was endorsing the mid-range jumper when, Booker and Chris Paul were hitting early in the NBA Finals. And DeMar doesn't fit, the current model for a shooting guard. But you get to watch this guy night in, night out. Just how good is he?
He is probably the best inside
20 feet scorer at that guard position. He can do really whatever he wants. I've never seen somebody get to his spot and just have such an awesome touch around the rim. And I mean that in the sense of he actually is entertaining to watch. He definitely has some times where I think the Spurs wish he were definitely a better defender, but on that offensive end, anytime he takes it inside the mid paint, the mid post, those general areas as a guard, he can really play with a little bit of a back to the basket throwback game. I think that's really where he shines, and he's just a phenomenal scorer. He still has athleticism. He's not quite the Toronto early days DeMar that could really finish amongst the trees, but he still gets up and has electrifying dunks. And I know he's a free agent. I'm definitely someone who, if he's good to come back and the Spurs want to bring him back, I would be totally happy about that. But also, his time is sort of on the clock of going for a championship ring, so I wouldn't be surprised to see if he maybe tries to join a contender and be a missing piece to a team such as perhaps Philadelphia. So whatever happens with DeMar, I wish him the best, because he is one of the most fun scorers to watch in our league.
How high are they on Keldon Johnson?
Oh my goodness! I can't speak for the Spurs, but I can tell you that everybody in the organization and the fan base loves him. He is just energy all over the place. Great positive vibes. Hard worker. He has, and I don't know this for a fact, but I'm going to guess he's put on 25 pounds of muscle since he came to the Spurs a couple of years ago. He looks much more filled out than the 19-year-old frame that the Spurs drafted, and he really can play almost anywhere on the court. He's been mostly playing small ball four, the kind of guy that sits in the corner, can attack the basket occasionally. He's athletic enough to be a really good rebounder. He can grab and go. The sky's the limit for him, and this Team USA opportunity is really going to thrust him forward in terms of confidence, I think, to have a really dynamic third year. I'm looking forward to what Keldon Johnson can do, as I personally think he's one of the untouchables on the team. He is really just somebody that the Spurs should develop and keep in-house, because I think he has superstar written all over him.
With the Spurs and the Warriors have one thing in common going into this draft, both of their head coaches are not going to be around for the draft.
Yeah, that's true. I imagine they'll have the Zoom meeting war room in that particular case. But yeah, they're going to have to get used to the time difference there for this particular that whole day. I'm sure is just nonstop phone calls among executives.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And I think if the Spurs have the draft unfold the way it is, I think they might be pleased at this point with the selections they have on the board. Where do you see the Spurs going with the number 12 pick in our mock draft?
Well, with the 12th pick in the NBA draft, if I'm selecting for the Spurs the way this one's gone, I would take Jalen Johnson out of Duke.
And why Jalen Johnson? What will he bring to the table for the Spurs?
I think he's somebody who has a good athleticism, defensive versatility, offensive potential. He really is somebody that I think fits what the Spurs could use with a departing Rudy Gay, or at least most likely departing Rudy Gay. And he is maybe going to be a sort of potential all-star, because obviously he had the opt-out situation in Duke, so who knows what could have happened in a normal year where he has a March Madness and maybe some practice time with Coach K. But instead, this year was just so crazy for college basketball. I don't blame him one bit for opting out, because it was a scary situation, and a lot of those kids were brave to even attempt to play the game. And overall, even though it was, I think, an 18 attempt sample size, he shot 44% from college three, and you like that number as a percent, and hopefully that can translate into the NBA.
Only 13 games in his college career, but was described as being very fluid. He comes from a basketball playing family, so you know he knows the game, and that seems to fit the kind of player that San Antonio has prided itself on over the years.
Absolutely. It's one of these guys that they should go after in a normal year. I think he probably goes a little bit higher because you have the whole Duke pedigree, and you have to be pretty smart to get into Duke. And the Spurs definitely enjoy their smart players. High IQ basketball is the name of Spurs basketball. So that's definitely somebody that I think the Spurs will fit in well with the Spurs. And I have him circled on my potential 12th overall pick. Kai Jones was off the board, and I also wouldn't be mad if the Spurs went Kai Jones.
Well, Carl, I appreciate your time today, and thank you so much for helping us out with our 2021 mock draft, and continue to success with your career in San Antonio.
I appreciate it, Tim. Thank you for the time.
Carl Schoening of ESPN Radio 1250 AM in San Antonio. I'm Tim Roy. So Jalen Johnson of Duke ends up a San Antonio Spur. Two more picks left in the lottery. The Indiana Pacers with a new head coach, they're on the clock. Jeremiah Johnson will make that selection for us when we continue here on Warriors.com and Warriors Sound. We continue to mock the 2021 NBA draft here at Warriors.com and Warriors Sound. I'm Tim Roy, and we are up to pick number 13. The Warriors have number 14, so this will be a pick that's crucial for Golden State. The Indiana Pacers are on the clock, and to help us from Bally Sports Indiana, Jeremiah Johnson covers the Pacers. And Jeremiah, first of all, thank you so much for giving us some of your time.
Happy to be with you. The Pacers are not usually in the lottery. I know the Warriors aren't either, so it's fun to participate in this exercise and have a little more to look forward to in the next week with a pick that is higher than the 20s, which it seems like the Pacers have often been picking.
Well, as we say here in Dub Nation BC, before Curry, the Warriors were in the lottery a bunch of times, but let's not go back on ancient history. Let's talk about the Pacers right now. And you know, it didn't work out coaching wise this year for Indiana, but they bring back a tried and true NBA coach in Rick Carlisle. What's that going to do for the franchise?
I think there's a new energy. Now, if you interviewed me at this time last year, or at least around draft time, which was actually in November prior to last season, there was also a new energy. But I think that all facets of the organization might admit that they maybe tried to change just a little bit too much, and they lost a little bit of what their identity had been for so many years. We've heard Kevin Pritchard say a number of times that the Pacers lost some of that hard hat and lunch pail mentality, and that had been a successful way of approaching things over the years. Not NBA Finals success or championship success, but this was a team perennially in the playoffs. And when you have a coach like Rick Carlisle, who's won a championship, who's been with the organization, who actually embraces Indiana. That's not to say that anybody in the past hasn't, but you know that he wants to be here. I think he actively searched out the Pacers when it did not work out in Dallas for the future. And so I think that has everybody excited. People know what to expect from Rick Carlisle. He knows what to expect from the people of Indiana. And so that relationship, that prior experience, really has people excited. I think the big thing that he's mentioned a time or two is that if this roster can just get healthy, there are a lot of pieces in place currently as well.
There are a lot of pieces on this roster, and if they're healthy, it looks like a very good roster. Well, what do you like about the squad as it's currently assembled?
Well, the Pacers are never going to be that team that is going to attract the top free agent, that is going to maybe have a big three or a big two and really have that kind of talent where you rely on a superstar. So because of that, they've assembled a roster that are a lot of guys that are good NBA players. Is there a great NBA player? We'll have to wait and see. Domantas Sabonis is a two-time All-Star. I think Caris LeVert has superstar potential. But there are a lot of guys that are in a similar salary range, and also they're at a similar point in their NBA career. So the key would be almost strength in numbers. If you have five or six guys that are all making maybe between $15 and $20 million. There's no jealousy. No one is upset that someone else is making a lot of money, and everybody sort of has to pull their own weight. Health has been the key issue. A guy like TJ Warren showed what he is capable of in the bubble, but he wasn't able to play this past season. And then there was a little bit of a trickle-down effect. When you didn't have TJ Warren, then you had to have a second unit player start for much of the season, and then that hurts your bench. And so if they can stay healthy, I really like just they could put five players on the court, and in a late game situation, you could go to five different guys. Again, if everyone is healthy, TJ Warren, maybe he's your go-to guy. Maybe in a certain situation, Domantas Sabonis just takes a smaller player down to the post. And Malcolm Brogdon has shown he is a guy in a clutch situation. He and Caris LeVert, they want the ball in their hands. So I still would love to see this roster together, fully healthy, and be able to execute late in games with so much diversity.
Do you think Miles Turner is underrated?
I think around the league he is for sure. And he's one of those guys, and he's the longest tenured Pacer. He's been here now through, Frank Vogel, Nate McMillan, Nate Bjorkgren, and now Rick Carlisle. So he's seen a lot of different coaching staffs. And I think that people think of him as a good shot blocker, but he's really a better all-around defender than I think people around the league give him credit for. He is really good in pick-and-roll defense. He's light on his feet, and he is, I would say, top two in the league in blocking shots. I mean, I would say in terms of rim protection, it's he and Rudy Gobert, but he doesn't ever get nearly the recognition that Gobert does. I do think Gobert is ahead of Miles defensively at this point. The one thing that Miles needs to probably pick up a little bit is his outside shooting. It was one of the reasons he was such a sought-after draft selection is because of the way he can shoot the ball. His numbers have tailed off just a little bit, but in this era where you want a big that can step out and shoot, that's the one thing. If you increase that three-point percentage just a little bit and you open things up just a little bit. He's never going to be a great low post offensive player, but I think his defense is underrated and his offense still has room to grow.
We know that Indiana is basketball country, and it's one of the great hotbeds of in American sports history. And certainly, you know, the pride that Indiana has in its basketball is well known. But right now, where is the Pacer fan base at right now? After all those years of success, but they haven't had that NBA championship that they so crave. What's their attitude toward the club right now?
I think it's a group of fans that, you know, they wanted to see that hard hat and lunch pail mentality, but maybe they're getting a little bit restless. I don't think that they really enjoyed watching the team this past season as much as maybe the first month. It was really good. They liked the new style and the get up and down and run and shoot some threes. But like you mentioned, people expect a certain level of defense, and that wasn't there for the majority of this past season. And so I think they want to get back to seeing a team that will win games defensively and maybe do enough offensively. But they also look at a team like Milwaukee that's a small market central division team, and obviously it's not apples to apples comparison because the Bucks have Giannis and the Pacers don't have anyone like that. But I do think there is some optimism that, hey, if the Bucks can do it, if they can find a diamond in the rough and then build around him, it can happen in Indiana. And I think making the playoffs for so many years recently and losing in the first round, you're getting farther and farther removed from the Paul George, David West, George Hill team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals in consecutive years. And so I think they're really thirsty for postseason success. Nobody was happy missing the playoffs, but nobody was really happy getting swept in the first round either. So this is a fan base that is really ready to see a team have a good regular season, which has been the norm with the exception of last season, but really go out and win a playoff series. Going into this upcoming season, that is for sure 100% the goal. And not to say that Rick Carlisle isn't going to say, you know, we want to win the East or we want to win the championship, but this is a team and a franchise that I think really needs to experience postseason success.
Final question before I ask you about the pick, because I really it's kind of a guilty pleasure for me because I love watching this kid play. But Domantas Sabonis is a throwback. He could play in any era with that footwork and that ability. And what's it like getting a chance to watch him play every night?
Oh, it's great. I mean, I'm from Indiana, so you mentioned what fans in Indiana expect to see from their team. I mean, the fan base loves Domas. He is a two-time All-Star, and his fundamentals are so good. I mean, he's one of the best passers in the league. You know, I mentioned that in terms of rim protection, maybe Miles Turner is second to Rudy Gobert. I would say in terms of a passing big man in the league, it's Nikola Jokic, the MVP, and Domantas Sabonis. So these are two big men that the Pacers have that are really elite in a certain area. And then just the low post offensive game that Domas has. He has so many moves. He's really good with his dominant left hand. He's working on his right hand on a regular basis. And I know in the offseason he works tremendously on his outside shot. And so much like Miles Turner, if his outside shot can improve just a little bit, look out. But I mean, he's a guy that you just love to see, especially if you have a weak defender. You just get out of his way and say, let him have a one-on-one opportunity in the post. And he's got so many different moves. And if you throw a double at him, then he finds a guy outside. He has amazing chemistry with Doug McDermott. And so when those two are on the court, it's almost like a two-man game within, you know, the five-on-five basketball. So I love talking with Domas. He's not a real outgoing personality. Maybe the interviews aren't super long, but I just love it. He is all business, and he wants to take your soul if you're trying to guard him, and basically he wants to jam on anyone that tries to stop him.
Well, he averaged 6.7 assists a game last year, and he's just going to get better, only 25 years of age. So right now, with the Pacers on the clock, and we've talked about the roster a little bit, about what they have and what they need, where would the Pacers go if the draft goes as our mock draft has gone? Where do the Pacers go?
So picking 13th, many would say that's not a great selection, but it is as high as the Pacers have picked in recent years, and really their highest draft selection since they grabbed Miles Turner at either 10th or the 11th pick in probably 7 years ago. And so I think they view this as an opportunity to get maybe it's a diamond in the rough, maybe it's a talent that has yet to fully develop, but I think they want to find someone special. And so I know Davion Mitchell was just picked in your mock draft. When the NCAA tournament ended, I thought he was maybe a guy that would be a good Pacers fit because of how he plays defensively. But if you look at the Pacers roster, they do need some more length on the wing. And I know around the NBA that the Pacers are not the only team looking for that. But whether it's in the backcourt or on the wing, I'm looking for them to find a little bit more athleticism, guys that can be maybe a lockdown type of defender. And so Chris Duarte of Oregon will be the selection here for the Pacers at number 13. He was just in this past week for a pre-draft workout, and it was a pretty high-profile group. He was there with Corey Kispert and also Zaire Williams, who I really like out of Stanford, but he's falling just a little bit in some of the mock drafts that I've seen. And so I think Chris Duarte is the pick, 6'6", more of a 2 than a 3. I think in a perfect world, the Pacers, maybe they find a good 3, and Moody out of Arkansas would be a guy, if he ever could fall, that I think they would be really interested in. But I love that Duarte has the experience, and I know people are shying away from him a little bit because he's 24 years old, and you rarely see an elite NBA player come to the draft at that age. But I believe he's from the Dominican Republic, went to junior college, 2 years at Oregon, so maybe he's not as worn out by the AAU circuit and maybe, you know, wall-to-wall basketball from the age of 10 as some of the other players who would be 24 years old coming into the draft. I actually got to meet him and shake his hand this past week at the pre-draft workout. I was very impressed. And when you have a team full of guys, I do think they want to try to get somebody special. I think Chris Duarte can maybe be that special player as a 6'6 guard, but I think he also is someone that could help this team right now. And there is a little bit of a sense of urgency with this roster. When you hire Rick Carlisle, when you've got a lot of guys between 26 and 29 years old, there is a time and a place to try to win right now. And so that seems to be a good pick at 13, Chris Duarte from Oregon.
Yeah, and everybody loves shooting. 42% beyond the arc his senior year as a Duck. And, you know, I don't think we should – I think we should get away as a league of classifying guys who play 4 years as being old. They're not old. They're just, you know, maybe instead of the G League, they were playing in the Pac-12. They're fine. So I congratulate you on the pick of Chris Duarte. He's a player that has been rumored to maybe be available for the Warriors at number 14. We'll have to wait and see on draft night. Jeremiah, thank you so much for your input. Appreciate your time. Continued success at Bally Sports Indiana and your coverage of the Pacers.
I appreciate the time, and let's make a pact. Neither the Warriors nor Pacers are in the lottery next year because they make long playoff runs.
Well, let's just make a date for the finals. How about that? We'll make a date for the finals.
I'm all in for that one.
Warriors-Pacers final. That has a nice ring to it. I think we should make that happen next year. Well, we're through 13 picks now of our NBA mock draft. Chris Duarte of Oregon going to the Pacers. I'm Tim Roy. When we come back, Nick Friedell of ESPN will select for the Warriors with their second pick in the lottery in our 2021 NBA mock draft here on Warriors.com and Warriors Sound. Well, here it is, our final pick in our 2021 mock draft on Warriors.com and Warriors Sound. We continue to mock the 2021 NBA draft. I'm Tim Roy, and let's review our lottery so far. Picks 1 through 13. The Detroit Pistons took Cade Cunningham of Oklahoma State. No surprise there. Houston goes with former prolific prep star Jalen Green, also played for G League Ignite. Evan Mobley of USC goes to Cleveland. Jalen Suggs of Gonzaga goes to Toronto. Then Orlando takes Scotty Barnes of Florida State. Another G League Ignite prospect, Jonathan Kuminga, ends up in Oklahoma City. And then Marcus Thompson of The Athletic took James Bouknight of UConn for the Warriors. Moses Moody of Arkansas then goes to Orlando, their second pick in the top eight. Sacramento goes for Kai Jones of Texas, while New Orleans takes Davion Mitchell of Baylor. Charlotte takes Keon Johnson of Tennessee. San Antonio takes Jalen Johnson of Duke. And then Indiana takes Chris Duarte, the four-year college player out of Oregon, who really shot the ball well in his senior year as a Duck. Time now for the Warriors, their second pick of the lottery, pick number 14. Nick Friedel of ESPN, then ESPN.com, comes by to help us out with that. And Nick, thank you so much for your time. And give me your quick thoughts on the NBA Finals. And were you surprised that Milwaukee was able to storm back the way they did?
Mr. Roy, I wasn't, only because I thought this was Milwaukee's time. Once they got that break in that Harden was hurt, Kyrie was hurt, the Nets weren't the Nets we all thought they were going to be in the postseason, just thought it was time for them to make it happen. And as we saw, even after getting down 0-2, Giannis did everything he had to do to put that team on his back. And that's what true superstars make happen on the biggest of stages. When you go score 50 in a finals clinching win, there's no bigger message you need to send. So I was happy to see, after all those years, Giannis saying, I want to stay and win here, that he did just that. And it was a cool scene, and it was something that he'll have with the history of that city forever.
No question. And, you know, 50 years, you know, the Warriors went 40 years between titles. Milwaukee goes a solid 50, and great to see them get a championship. I would have been happy with either city. I think Phoenix deserves a title at some point, too, you know, simply because they were a gold standard franchise for so long, but was not in the cards for the Suns this time around. Nick, now let's look at the Warriors in this offseason. And you know, we all know it's a big offseason for Golden State. What do you look for the Warriors to do, and what, you know, what kind of moves should they make? What are their needs from your perspective?
Tim, I have thought about this a lot, and I keep going back to, you try to swing for the fences and get that extra star in some kind of deal. It's just that you don't know if that star is going to become available. And I think there's such a focus here as we get set for the draft, what they're going to do with these picks, would they potentially package these picks. But you also have to remember that we don't know what's going to happen in a few months. You just have to keep your options open as to which players may appear on the market, and put yourself in place, if that does happen, to be ready to make a move. So I love the fact that Steph is playing the way that he is. If you're a Warriors fan, you've got to be ecstatic with that. Plus, assuming Klay comes back and Draymond is ready to roll, that is a very, very solid core, on top of the fact that you and I watched Andrew Wiggins, from a two-way perspective, have the best season of his career last year. So you get a little more from Wiseman. Assuming you keep both of these picks and one of them really hits next season, you're going to be in very good shape to be much better than you were a season ago.
Yeah, the other part about the picks is that you know, if you look at the Warriors and their salary structure, you know, getting two, you know, rookie contracts per se, that's a good thing for Golden State, at least in the short term.
Very much so. And I think there are a lot of fans that don't fully grasp that, you know, they think that Joe Lacob and the ownership group will just spend and spend and spend. They've spent a ton. And Tim, the repeater tax hurts. And it's not that they're not going to spend, but they have spent a huge, huge amount of money. So assuming that there isn't that big star to be had in some kind of deal, the odds are, at least as we sit here now, that they make both of those picks and they plug them into what they've already got on the books with Steph and Klay and Wiggins on max deals and Draymond on a $100 million deal. So when you're trying to look at the financial impact, it's still a safer bet that both picks get made and they try to weave them into Steve Kerr's system. But it's a really good point, because the money has been spent, and there's always a little more if need be, but there is a lot of other tax ramifications that you have to think about as you're making these moves.
Nick, and the other aspect I wanted to touch on with you is looking at the Western Conference, and granted, there are some teams that were, you know, bothered or decimated, if you will, by injuries this year. But it seems to me that if I'm a Warrior fan, I'm encouraged because it looks like the West is wide open. Would you concur with such a feeling?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you look at what happened this year, and Tim, you look at what happened with the Clippers in the postseason with Kawhi, nobody's quite sure if he's going to play. The Lakers look pretty old pretty quickly after that great bubble run that they went on about a year ago. I mean, you look at the Jazz. The Jazz always look great in the regular season, and then for a variety of different reasons, never appear to be the same team once the playoffs begin. And then with Phoenix, you're not sure what's happening with Chris Paul's contract situation. You're not sure how everything else is going to set in place after they had their nice finals run. So for the Warriors, everything is looking pretty good right now. But as we both know, so much of this centers around what kind of player Klay will be when he gets on the floor at some point in the beginning of the season, and then what kind of player he'll be a few months later once he starts to get his rhythm underneath him after missing so much time. So it's a fascinating, fascinating Warriors year. But if you're a member of the fan base, you've got to be feeling pretty good about this team being able to find its stride in a West that appears, at least on paper right now, to be up for grabs.
So if the draft unfolds the way our mock draft has unfolded, where do the Warriors go at 14?
If I'm Bob Myers, hearing the names that you listed that have already come off the board, this one is pretty simple for me. I'm going with Corey Kispert from Gonzaga. I really like his ability to hit from all over the floor. And Timmy's got defensive flaws that will be exploited on the next level. I don't think there's any doubt about that, but he can shoot the hell out of the ball. And what did we see from this Warriors group last season? If Steph didn't have it going, and Jordan Poole had a nice stretch there towards the end of the season, but there just weren't that many guys that you could turn to and know that if they got that open look, it was going down every time. And that seems to be the read on Kispert coming into this draft, is that he is that spot-up shooter who can be deadly from the outside. In terms of how he's described from just the shooting perspective, it reminds me a little bit of a guy like Kyle Korver, because the feeling was if you got Kyle the ball in the flow of the offense and you got him that open look, he was going to knock it down. And there were defensive issues there. He worked at him over the course of his career. He had a really nice career that he carved out for himself. So I think Kispert has the ability, at least offensively, to come in and help a team right away. And certainly, as we know, it's a lot easier getting space when you're playing off Steph Curry.
Yeah, first-team All-America, WCC Player of the Year. Shot 44% from three last season, 40.8 from his career. Those are good numbers coming out of college. And like you said, shooters get old. They just park themselves in corners and wait for the ball to be skipped around. But they can still knock down that shot. And that's why they play in the league for a long time, because they can knock down that shot. Nick, thank you so much for the pick. Our mock draft is concluding. I know that you've been spending a lot of time on our flagship station, 95.7, The Game in the Bay Area. Do we expect to hear your voice on there sometime soon?
Oh, you know it. You know it. I'm always a phone call away. And the coolest part, Tim, is that you never know exactly when that phone call or text is going to be there. So
exactly.
You got to stay ready, like all these kids coming into the draft. I'm ready to roll when they need.
Just put me in, Coach. Just put me in.
That's right.
Hey, Nick, thank you so much for your coverage of the NBA. And I always learn something when I read one of your articles. And best of luck.
You got it, my man.
So there it is, our 2021 NBA mock draft. We are through 1 through 14. The Warriors end up with James Bouknight of UConn and Corey Kispert of Gonzaga, the 6'7" shooter who played 4 years at Gonzaga but put up some great numbers and a consensus first-team All-American last season. We're glad that you checked out our NBA mock draft and would like to get some feedback from it. You can hit me up on Twitter at WarriorsVox. That's Warriors V-O-X. I'm Tim Roy, and thanks once again for participating in our 2021 mock draft here at Warriors.com and Warrior Sound.